Hello and welcome back. My name is Rabbi Avi Heller. Together we are learning Masechet Moed Katan. We find ourselves on Daf Hey Amud Bet, that's 5B. Right at the top, we're going to be at the top of the second line. This series of recordings is a joint project of OU Torah, the OU Department of Synagogue Services, and the Daf HaShavua Foundation. What we've been talking about is a section from our Mishnah that says that one of the things that they would do on Chol HaMoed for the sake of the public good is they would send out public workers to be mitzayena takfarot. They would mark grave sites. And marking the grave sites was designed to help people prevent themselves from becoming tameh, either in their own bodies by stumbling onto graves or parts of human remains, or also to protect them, their truma, if they were carrying truma or other holy objects, that if they came into an area that was contaminated by tumat neit, that had certain truma in it, the holy objects they were carrying would become contaminated and would have to be burned. So as an act of public good, they would mark the graves. The question is, which graves do they have to mark, or which areas did they have to mark? So that's what the teaching that we're about to learn is, all the limitations. Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis taught, second line down. Ein Misayinin, they did not mark the graves that had kizayit min hamet, that just had a small portion of human remains, flesh of the dead body. If it was just a kizayit, like an olive's worth, they didn't mark the grave. V'lo al etzam kisha'ora, and they didn't mark an area that had small bone fragments, if they were as small as little pieces of barley. And little pieces of barley are the minimum amount of bone that, or bone that is the size of a piece of barley, is the minimum shear that if you touch it, you will become tameh. But they did not mark those areas. The lo al davar she'eino matami v'ohel, and not on any matter that didn't cause tuma by ohel. Ohel means tent. So there are different ways that when you come into contact with something that is impure, that is tamei, there are different ways that you can be that it can affect you. Some forms of tamei, you can become tamei from them even if you don't touch them. If you move them, that's called tuma heset, or if you lie down on them or walk on them. That's Mishkav or Moshav. But there are some forms of tummy that you actually have to touch them. If you only come into contact with them, you become tummy. That is called Mitame Bimaga, to become tummy by touch. However, more severe kinds of tuma, even if you don't touch them or move them, but if you come into an area that would be considered an intent in which they exist. So let's say you were in a house that has a roof, and in that house is a dead body, you can become tameh just by being in the same house because you share a roof with the dead body. Or in the case that we're talking about here, if there's a tree that has an overhanging foliage, and there is a grave under the foliage of the tree, and you're also under the foliage of the tree, even if you're not exactly the same area, you can become tameh ba'ohel. So it seems like the concern here with their marking the graves, particularly as we'll see in a minute, is that anything that didn't have the level of tuma that could cause tuma ba'ohel, that it would be a situation where you would become tummy even if you weren't 100% near the actual grave site or human remains, you were just under the canopy, that they wouldn't mark those. And it seems like, as we'll see as it goes later on, that it's because it's a question of how much care you had to take. So you were responsible to make sure that you didn't actually touch or come into contact with graves or pieces of dead bone, of dead body or bone. But if it's a situation where you might come under a tree and then only find out afterwards that there's also a grave under the tree, it was necessary to mark it so that people could avoid that situation. Okay, aval, however, mitzaynin al hashidra, they did mark a spot where there was a skeleton, parts of a skeleton. The shidra is the spinal column. So if you had a whole spinal column, they would mark that area. The al hagul golet, and if there was a skull, they would mark it. Al rov binyan, the al rov minyan hamit, if there was the majority of a human skeleton, that's rov binyan, or rov minyan, or many bones, even if they weren't, the rov binyan are large bones, like a femur. A rov minyan would be a lot of bones that were smaller bones. They would mark those. The aim is Sainin al Havada'ot. They did not mark things, this is what we were speaking about, certain areas of Tumah, They didn't mark those. If it was a certain area of Tuma, people had to be aware to avoid them on their own. Aval, however, Mitzayin al Hashteko, they did mark ones that you might be not sure if it was a Tame area or not. The Elohein Hashteko, and what do we mean by areas of doubtful Tuma? Schachot, canopies, tree canopies, as the Gemara will explain later. Upraot, and protrusions, that is, areas like of a rock wall or other non-organic material that sticks out and might create a roof, ubeit hapras, and a field in which there may be human remains. And all three of these we're going to discuss exactly what they mean a little later in the Gemara. And continuing on in our teaching, ve'ein ma'amidin tzion b'makom tuma, and they didn't put the marker in exactly the spot where the tumah was, shlo lahafshid et taharot, so in order not to waste the taharot. In other words, if you, as what Rashi says, if you put the marker right there, by the time you get there, it's too late, and you'll already, you know, have become tameh, or your tumah will become tameh. So you have to put it a little bit beforehand, which is the same as like saying, you know, telling you what street you're coming up on before you get to the street. You have to put it a little ahead. But you also don't want to put it too far away from the makom tuma, in order not to make too much of the land of Israel, so to speak, tameh. So if you put the marker way ahead, as soon as people cross the marker, they're going to think that that's a tameh area, and you don't want to make more of Eretz Yisrael tameh than you have to. That's the end of the teaching. That whole teaching are all the limitations of that. Where do we put markers? Where don't we put markers? Now the Gemara has a question. Is it true at the very beginning of the teaching we said that we don't mark areas that have a olive's worth of human remains? And is it true that they are not matami ba'ohel? Because it seems like basically those first three markers, a kazayit of human flesh, a bone the size of a barley, seem to be all in the same category of davar she'eno matami ba'ohel, things that would not make you tame if you were under the same roof or under a canopy with them. So it seems like that teaching is arguing that a kezayit min hameit is not one of the things that creates tumah ba'ohel. However, that does not seem to be the case. The Hatna, and we have a teaching, a Mishnah in Ohalot, which is the tractate of Mishnayot that deals with this kind of tumah of being under a tent, called Ohalo, tents. And there it says, Elu shemetamim ba'ohel, these are the things that create tuma under a canopy, under a roof. Kizayit min hameit. And it says it is kizayit min hameit. So we have a contradiction here. This teaching said we don't mark a kizayit min hameit because it's not something that creates tuma under an ohel. However, the Mishnah in Ohalo says that it does. How are we going to solve the contradiction? Amar of Papa, or Papa, solves the contradiction. Hacha the kizayit mitzumtzam. When we're talking about marking the graves, we're talking about a piece of human remains that is exactly a kizayit. Exactly a kizayit. Not a little bigger, not a little less. So hacha the kizayit mitzumtzam askinan. Here it is with a kizayit exactly askinan that we are dealing with. The soap, because in the end, after a little bit of time, michzar chaser. It's going to shrink as it is outside and it is exposed to the elements. If it's right now exactly a kazayit, it's going to shrink to less than a kazayit. And once it's less than a kazayit, it will no longer be create tuma ba'ohel. And so they say, when the guys go out, when the public workers go out and they see a piece of human remains that's exactly a kazayit, they say, mutav yisrufu alav tuma, better that a person in the near future, in the next few days or weeks, should come up, we won't mark it, and those people will come here and they'll see that they have come into contact with a kizayit min hameit, and they'll have to burn their truma. So muta yisrufu alav truma of a kachim and their kachim, their holy objects, lefisha'a, temporarily, meaning for this next short period of time, the al yisrufu alav l'olam, and not have to burn it forever. Meaning if we put up a marker here, people are going to continue to consider this to be an area that is tamei ba'ohel for a long period of time. I don't know how long a period of time it is. They say la'olam, forever. I would think that they go out once a year at least, so it's only a year long. maybe if they mark it, maybe the marker lasts for even longer than a year, and when they go out to make markings, they don't remove their old markings. So it's definitely a long period of time. They didn't want to create a situation where they were telling people that an area of Eretz Yisrael was Tameh, even though it wasn't. And they were willing to create a situation where in the short term, they didn't warn people, so then in the long term, they wouldn't mislead people, l'chumra. That's what he says. The Elohim has sekel, and these are the doubtful areas. Schachot, canopies. Now, schachot comes from the word like schach, like that which you put on your sukkah roof. So schachot are foliage that goes over your head. Upraot, and things that are uneven, that are non-organic, that stick out of, that could stick out over your head, like an uneven shelf coming out of a wall. Schachot, the foliage, which you've already defined, is Ilan HaMesech Al Ha'aret, is a tree that sticks out and covers over an area of ground. Praot, and the overhang, are Avanim Praot, are uneven stones, Hayotot Minagader, that go out from a boundary marker. Okay, so we know what those are. We know that Schachot is foliage, and Praot are walls, protruding walls or ceilings. Beit HaPras, what is a field that might have human remains? Kiditnan, as we learned in a Mishnah, and this Mishnah is also an Ohelot. Hachoresh et HaKever, one who plows over a grave site, Harihu Ose Beit HaPras. He is the one that makes a Beit HaPras. So what, the reason why it's a doubtful situation is because they have now plowed over an area where there were human remains and bones. And they've been kind of ground up and tossed over with all the area that's been plowed. So probably in this whole field of 100 amos, there are probably some bones and some human remains that are there. But they are not all over, not in every area. So if you walk through a Beit HaPras, you are doubtful whether or not you will come into contact with human remains or not. And that's why Beit HaPras is considered to be an area of doubt. The Kamahu Oseh, and how big does he make this Beit HaPras, this field of that might have human remains in it? Milo Ma'ana, the full length of a furrow. And how much is that? Mea Ama, it's 100 Amos. Okay, Ubeit HaPras, Mi Metame Ohel. Now, we said in our teaching in the beginning, in our Braita, that we only mark things that create Tuma Ohel, that create Tuma if you're in an overhang with them. So who says that a Beit HaPras is like that? The Ha'amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, we now have a teaching from Yehuda in the name of Shmuel, that if a person is walking across a Beit HaPras, and Rashi says this is especially, they're going to Yerushalayim to bring their carbon Pesach, so they have, they're on their way to do a mitzvah, and they're carrying something that they have consecrated. Menapeach Adam Beit HaPras, the whole list, the person should blow on the Beit HaPras and go. In other words, he should check each foot before he puts his foot down, like he's checking for mines, he's checking to make sure that he doesn't walk over bones. Now, if that's the case, then he's allowed to walk through the field. He doesn't have to be worried that he's going to walk into an area that is overhung by a tree or something like that. All he has to do is make sure that he doesn't step on bones. Rav Yehuda Bar Ami, Mishmei to Ula, Rav Yehuda Bar Ami, in the name of Ula, says, Omar, Beit HaPras Shenidash Tahor, a Beit HaPras, that gets trampled over becomes tahor, meaning if many people have walked through a Beit HaPras already and they've beaten a path, then even if there were bones on the trampled area, they've been ground down under the dirt already, and we're not concerned about them. We're only worried about the bones if you come into actual contact with them, and if they are under the dirt of the path and you're not digging there, then we're not worried about it. Amar of Papa, so we have a problem here, right, which is that it sounds like, according to the Brisa that we taught in the beginning of our recording, that a Beit HaPras is something that it creates Tuma Ba'ohel in a canopy setting. And here we learn that a Beit HaPras is not, doesn't create Tuma in a canopy setting. It's just you're afraid of coming into actual contact with the bones. You just have to make sure that you don't. So how will we solve this contradiction? Amar of Papa, or Papa said, Lo Kasha, Kan Bisada Sha'avad Ba'keder. One case is dealing with a field in which there is a grave, but we don't know where it is. So that's the doubt. In that situation, where you had a grave, but you lost the grave, so you're not sure where in the field is the grave, so you might at any point stumble across the grave, but it is an actual intact grave, then We do mark it because it is a doubt that if you actually come into contact with the grave, it would be tamei ba'ohel. Kan, and the case where we talked about where you are minapeach adam, where a person just has to watch each step as they take a step forward, b'shada shenechrash b'kever, is where the field was plowed up. And so since it's plowed up, you have sort of an even distribution of little bone fragments all over the field, and there you just have to come and be careful not to come into direct contact with them. So the Gemara asks, though, b'shada shenechrash b'kever, b'tapras harilei, a field that has been plowed, where the grave has been plowed up, is that what's called a Beit HaPras? Now the Hagos HaGra changes this, actually, and it doesn't make sense, because our usual definition of a Beit HaPras is a field that has been plowed over, because Beit HaPras itself is related to the word pras, which means to pull apart into pieces, and so all the bones or anything that's left from the grave has been pulled into pieces and is scattered throughout the field. So the name Beit HaPras really is about a field that has been plowed over. So he changes it instead from Shadesh and Neharash. He says it should be Shadesh Avad. Do we really call a field where there was a grave and you just lost it? You're not sure where in the field is the grave. Is that called a Beit HaPras? So that's how the Gemara changes. And I think that version of the question makes more sense. The Gemara answers, in, yes, it is. Because we have a teaching that none did we not learn in the Mishnah. Shlosha Beit HaPrasim, there are three different kinds of Beit HaPras. Here are the three kinds. Shadesh and Avad Bakhader, a field in which a grave has been lost. And what we said is that is the kind of field that they would mark, because if you were to come across the site of that grave, it is Tamei Ba'ohel. It would cause Tumah Ba'ohel as a full grave. And so therefore it should be marked by those who go out to mark the graves. V'sadesh ha-necharash ba-kever, and a field that has been plowed over and then included a grave. And that is our usual definition of Beit HaPras, where you just have to make sure that you don't step on the bones. And finally, the third category, which we haven't discussed, is called a shdei bochim, a field of crying. Ma'ar shdei bochim, what is a field of crying? Rabbi Yeshua of Ra'aba Mishmei de Ula Amar. Yeshua, the son of Abba, says in the name of Ula, Amar. Sadesh Shemaftirin Bameti. This is a field in which they would deposit or leave over the dead bodies. And this word, Maftirin, is a word that we use all the time as a word of finishing, meaning like the Maftir reading, and the Torah reading is always the end Torah reading. When we say ein maftirin achar pesach afikoman, it means that afikoman is the last thing that you eat. So this is the final depositing place of dead bodies before they would put them into the grave. So many times they would bring the bodies from wherever they were coming from, different villages and places, and they would deposit them there temporarily in the shdei bochim, the field of crying, until they would bury them. So Rashi says the reason that it's called a field of crying is because both the people that would bring the bodies when they would say goodbye to their loved ones and the people that were going to then do the burying, they would both cry at this time when they received the bodies. The time of Mai, and why is this considered to be a kind of a Beit HaPras, a doubtful area of Tumah? Amar Avimi Mishum Yeush Bailim Nagubo. Avimi said, because of... Sorry about that. Just to conclude, Amar Avimi says, Mishum Yeush Bailin Naguba, because of the Yeush Bailin. In other words, the people that are bringing the dead bodies are going to deposit them in a stable chim, in a field of crying, and it's possible that in the transfer from one to the other, that there may be body parts that get left behind. So because those body parts might get left behind, there's a doubt, there's a possibility that there will be Tumah in those fields. Another possibility, the Hagos HaGra, he changes it from Shdei Bochim, a field of crying. He says it could be Shdei Kuchim. So there is a word called a kuch, which is a place where you put a dead body before its final interment. They would put them into these shelves and bury them there. And then after all the flesh had desiccated and it was just the skeletons left, they would take the skeletons and they would bury them in a more permanent grave site. So it could be that they temporarily stored the bodies or temporarily interred them in a state kuchim, and then they would reinter them afterwards in the official grave sites, in which case there was always some kind of human remains that was in this state kuchim, but you wouldn't necessarily know where or which kuchs, which little niches had the dead bodies in them. In any event, the final conclusion then is that the areas that we mark on Chol HaMoed, when the employees of the government would go out to mark the graves, they were particularly marking fields that had been, in which there was a grave site that had been lost. So there was a full and intact grave somewhere in the field, but they didn't know where it was. And because it was a grave site that could cause Tumat Ohel, so they would mark the field so that you would know that as you cross that field, you have to be careful that you might come across an intact grave. We'll stop there and continue in our next recording.